I just wanna say, I brought my laptop up here. I'm not anti-technology, you know that. I was watching something the other day where one of the pastoral staff somewhere got up in front of everybody and had his phone in his hand. And I think he was gonna read some scripture. It disappeared because of one thing or another, and then he was chuckling, commenting on that, and then he tried to get it back, got it back, and then it disappeared again. And to me, it seemed like that went on forever, laughing back and forth. And I was thinking, how about just using a book? Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote a letter to the Soviet or Russian government, whatever it was at the time. I can't even remember what happened. Advising them basically to reject all technology and everybody go back into the countryside and have horses and buggies and live a simple life, and that would solve the coming problems, you know. You know, in some ways, maybe. There's something on here which I realized I didn't have any sort of hard copy. And I may refer to it at some point. I was trying to characterize things up to now, a day or two ago, in terms of where we're at with the Torah. And generations of trouble was part of what I was thinking about. And the glory and the shame. And in within all the shame, do you think there's a generation of righteousness in the family of Abraham up until now? Is this all of like shame, mayhem, bloodshed, excessive vengeance? What is it all of like? What? A bit of a
little package.
Can it be a bit of a? Can it be a bit all of both? Or is it just, is that why I asked the question?
I'm not sure exactly what
you're doing.
What?
At least half and half.
Half and half. You know, just before I came up here, I don't always know why things come to my mind, but I remembered this show. Any of you heard of it? It's called Matt. And I remembered an episode where Alan Alda, is he the one that was Hawkeye?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know which character he was. I sometimes don't also remember the names. And this one episode, I think he was making a comment about where he was, the place that he was at the time. And he referred to it as an inflamed boil on the buttocks of the earth. And that might seem like a pretty apt description for the situation he was in and the situation all around him. But and I found myself relating that to the usually get so close to some things and look at them so close that you like, I mean, you can tell, like, if I do this, right? How much of the room can I see?
Not much.
If I can still focus, though, I can focus really keenly on one little spot, right? And then if I focus on that and I think about it, and that spot is a troubled spot, where do we tend to look? I mean, naturally, we tend to look where? What looks like a problem or trouble or pain or whatever, right? We tend to look there. And then we get really close to it, we can do that, right? Really, really close to it. And so the thing itself, in its apparent nature, will fill up our entire consciousness, right?
Yeah.
So, who thinks that God's still a loving God and working redemption in the world even right now?
Okay.
I do. Who could tell me whether or not at any point when you're focusing on something, you're getting up really close and looking at it for an extended period of time, if it becomes much, much harder to see that that's what God's like and that he's doing things like that, who thinks that that's the case?
Say that again.
I wasn't clear. If forgive me if I'm not clear, I'll try to become clearer if I'm not clear. There are all kinds of things I'm trying, you know, I'm working on. So when you have some troubling issue and you focus on it really closely and you get really close to it, like, you know, like this, how many, if you think about it, notice that God's love and his overarching redemption and the fact that he's still bringing about his perfect will for humanity, how many find that that tends to be harder to notice then? How many have ever gotten to a point where you actually felt like God isn't even doing that anymore?
Yeah.
And may have even entertained the thought, either lead it through your mind or actually maybe stuck on it, but God is a colossal pain and he's really giving you a raw deal. Has anyone ever felt like that? So, and that's pretty human, right? If you've never felt that way, that's probably good. Sometimes we don't admit things to ourselves about what we thought or felt. But at any rate, it would tend to cloud our judgment, right? And then it might affect what we do or what we don't do. It might affect our sense of what God's leading us to do. And even at some points make us feel like, what's the point? Anybody ever felt like that? So, if we get to a point like that, is it God's fault? Or, I mean, I'm not even concerned about blaming and all that. You know, not even blaming yourself. That's not really what I'm, not really what I want to look at. But the thing is, we have a tendency to find blame somewhere, right? We tend to look for, where's the blame go? And, is God to blame? Is God to blame for those things when we're experiencing it that way? Like, for instance, if your family, you know, your mom, your dad, your cousins, uncles, some group of family members sold you into slavery, which, you kidnapped and sold. That's never stopped. That's not an ancient phenomenon. It didn't end with the Civil War. There are slaves in this country. And slaves all over the place. And there are people selling other people. And in fact, I just learned of one, I can't remember who it was, because I don't remember if it was a Jewish man in Israel or not, but somebody sold their 14-year-old daughter to a Bedouin. Kind of an elderly Bedouin. She managed to escape, actually, and get to a place where there were people that were helping her get her out of that situation. She was sold for $3,000, or the equivalent. Now, could that happen in a world that's the loving God? God is actually in authority over? Huh? Sure.
Of course.
I mean, you get mad at God when you hear stuff like that?
No, I blame it on men.
What? Did someone say yes? I mean, God can take it, by the way. if somebody gets mad at God, here's the thing, is that I'm not looking for that so that I can tell you you're bad because you got mad. The thing is, we don't necessarily understand things clearly, and God can be, he can seem pretty disturbing. And anybody that's begun to walk with Yeshua that's, been doing it for more than 11 minutes, I think if they haven't found anything disturbing to them, something that seems disturbing about God, maybe 25 or 30 minutes, maybe it takes a day or even sometimes a year when somebody comes to faith to get to the point where they can be disturbed with God. I'm not sure, what the longest period of time someone could go is. But, it's pretty natural from our perspective when we start to kind of look at what God seems to be doing to actually experience disturbance over things that he seems to allow or possibly cause or not prevent. And one thing I'm sure about those three things is that nothing that has ever happened in all of human history was something that God could prevent. That seems true. Because if God had prevented it, it wouldn't have happened. And I have to believe that anything that happened that he wanted to prevent, he could have. So, when you start studying history, there might be just a whole lot of things that seem really disturbing. Because it's like, he could have prevented this?
There are a lot of things that didn't happen.
That didn't happen?
Yeah.
I'm only talking about the ones that did, though, at the moment.
Why?
That's a good question. Hey! You're brilliant. Hey, look. Did you ever count up all the things that could have happened that didn't?
Yeah.
And did you ever consider that maybe God did prevent those things? That was specifically why, though, I said that the thing that did happen, He didn't prevent any of the things that did happen. But we may have no idea all the things that he actually did prevent.
Does he have connections?
What? Does he?
Yeah.
Does God prevent things from happening? I think so. I think one day, a year or two ago, when I was driving down to New Falls, and I was heading up Mohonk Mountain, and there was no curve all to go on the right. I told you all about this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember exactly how long ago it was. There was a large pickup with a big heavy equipment trailer behind it coming the other way. And that guy went into some kind of a skid. I don't know why. And that trailer was whipping around behind his truck. And he was moving back and forth, and it looked like it was just getting worse. And I saw him coming, and And I don't know that I was scared. I just thought, well, and it looks like this might be it. I mean, it was just death coming. I didn't think like the loss of everything. That's not what I was thinking about. But I mean, it looked very likely that I could just be pieces of it and then sometime in the next few seconds. And to this day, I have a hard time understanding, unless it was angels, how that thing sort of, I'm like this, you know, and it's like this, and it's coming at me, and then and it's like, I went as far as I could over, but because I had nowhere to go, and if I would have gone farther, I probably would have flipped myself into it. So, you know, I could just, very little I could do. And so my car like this, and this thing is kind of like this, and then, like, the whole thing just kind of just goes. Asked me, and then the guy actually managed to straighten out. Yeah, I had a little adrenaline. And then, but I remember, it's just like, ooh. And then I just, you know, I mean, I wasn't disturbed by the thought, oh, I could have just been killed. That didn't bother me. It's like, well, oh, good, I'm still here. But see, that's an instance where it seems to me that God prevents it. Now, I'll give you another one that to me is more compelling than that. It's been on my mind several times lately. I don't entirely know why, but I was racing my brother Mark home from the 7-Eleven store. A store, by the way, where I committed some criminal actions on probably one or two different occasions to my shame. Whether I had that day or not, I don't know. But we were racing home on our bikes. It was, I think maybe it was dark or darkish. And we were going through an intersection in the development we lived in. Did I say this was in Sacramento, California? And I didn't see a car. My brother didn't see a car. And the guy in the car didn't see us. But I finally did see the car when it ran right into my brother's bike, and my brother went like up in the air, and he went all the way around, and then he came down, so he was just like sitting on the sidewalk with his knees up like this. The guy who stopped, this little Japanese guy, scared to death. I remember exactly how I felt. I know it was scary. My brother didn't have a scratch on him. He didn't break a bone. He didn't get a bruise. Nothing. I don't even know how that's, I mean, short of some divine intervention, I do not know how that is possible. It just looked like way too many physical forces. Kinetic energies going in different directions for somebody to be completely, totally uninjured, have no damage to their clothing, and I can't remember his bike. I can't remember, I think maybe something happened to his bike. I can't quite remember. So, yeah, I think God prevents all kinds of things. I had a Sunday school teacher when I was a kid, and I still don't entirely know whether some story should be told to young kids that you're teaching Sunday school, but maybe they should. He had a baby. I think his wife was gone. The baby was crying. He kept crying, and it was driving him around. He actually picked the baby up, put it over his head, and he was about to smash the baby down into the floor. And the power went out. The lights went up. He noticed it, you know. But it's baby, you know. He looks outside. The power's on in every other house. I'm pretty sure God if you think about your own life and anything you might have been just about to do that might have been really bad, kind of bad, or somewhere in between, you ever remember a moment where it seemed like you'd already decided, you're like, it's already happening, and somehow you stop? Does anybody here think the Holy Spirit, like, sometimes manages to tap you on the shoulder or whisper something in your ear that you actually hear that changes what would happen? Do you think that happened? What? I mean, I can remember all kinds of people that I didn't punish. Now, maybe it's only because I was able to decide myself not to punish them. On the other hand, maybe on some of those occasions, it's really God offered something that was prevention. So, I don't know. I bet other people have stories they could probably kind of say, oh, I think that would have happened if, you know, God did something. So where am I going with this? Could God have prevented Joseph's brothers from betraying him, selling him into slavery?
Yeah.
I think so. This question might be trickier. Could God have prevented the descendants of Abraham from being slaves for like 400 years?
Not after he said they would be.
What?
Not after he said they would be.
Yeah, the thing is, it seems if you look at it that way, God can't lie. And he doesn't just get indecisive and just, I'm going to do it this way now, after he's revealed what he's going to do. So in that sense, yeah. And that isn't indicating some weakness or inability on God's part, like those intellectually dishonest people who ask the question about, well, so God can do anything? And you say yes, and you say, well, can he make a rock too heavy for himself to lift? It's just stupid. It's stupid enough that people try to think it through. It's like, no, it's just stupid. Not everything even deserves an answer, although I think there is an answer for that. But that didn't have to happen. And Joseph's brother didn't have to betray him. And Jacob didn't have to incite them to hatred and exasperate them by playing favorites to the extent that they would have had to be pretty exemplary people not to get to the point where they started to hate that kid. Considering the way their father treated them compared to him, and the fact that they didn't all have one mother, and it was obvious that the ones that came from this one mother were more loved. And then he gives them this coat, which apparently there were coats that were similar to what seems to be indicated there in the ancient world, and it was like, you know, dignitaries, really special people had these kind of garments, and apparently Joseph had one of those, and it always reminds me of this one soap opera I saw where the one daughter is talking about the fur coat that her sister got and a cloth coat that she got for Christmas. And it was hatred that's being expressed in this. I didn't watch soap operas a lot, but there were a few moments I remember from stuff that I saw. It's like it's sort of the same kind of thing. And so, Joseph is being set up for what's happening to him, and his father is in fact setting him up for it. And the brothers are being set up, and the father is setting it all up. And the father, by loving what he loves the most, the way that he loves it, and displaying it the way that he loves it, is ensuring that he is going to lose the thing that he loves the most by the way he is loving it to excess. And see, we can understand his feelings, But that doesn't make his actions much good with respect to what he created in the earth of his sons by excessive doting and favoritism and gifts that were not in any way equal. And then, you got half-brothers. I realized when I was reading it this week that, when Joseph was tending sheep with his brothers, you realize none of those brothers were his full brothers, they were half-brothers. And he also wasn't with brothers from the servant, the maid, Rachel's maid. They were, I believe, all sons of on the other side. So the thing is, they're not even equal in terms of who they came from. They're all from somebody that was loved less than the mother of Joseph. And they're all loved less than Joseph. And it's a pretty hurtful atmosphere overall. And we could even say it wasn't fair that Joseph had to be born into a situation like that. And you know what? I suppose it wasn't fair. Because I have come to just accept as a truth that life isn't fair. I'm also very grateful that it's not, because if I got what was fair, it would be all over for sure. It wouldn't be good. So God's given you better than all of us fair. So I think that's a pretty good arrangement, but it takes a while sometimes to be able to see that. So anyway, later on, Joseph says about what his brother did to him, "You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good." What does it sound like when you think God meant it? What? Well, after they did it anyway, he decided to mean it that way,
No.
What?
No.
What is it?
Purposed it.
God meant it? What?
Purposed it.
Is it repurposing or purposing?
Or is it knowing ahead of time what was going to happen and ahead of time deciding how he was going to use it?
And having a plan ready.
See, once again, one thing I know for sure is that what Joseph's brother did to him is something God does not prevent. I know that. I know that he could have if he wanted to, and he didn't.
He did save him from killing him. At least he didn't allow
him. Well, wait. Did God keep them from killing him, or did
Reuben? Maybe God.
Oh, yeah.
So now we're back to, does God prevent things? And I think maybe the advent of those merchant caravans coming along.
So Reuben didn't come back in time.
What?
God could have made it so that Reuben didn't come back in time.
Yeah. So it does seem like in the midst of it all, raw deal or not, it does seem like God prevented them from killing him. By arranging a situation where he could be sold.
Is
that the kind of intervention you want?
But at the same time, it prevented Reuben from rescuing.
Yeah, and he was completely beside himself, right?
Reuben didn't mind if he was
trying
to get him out of the pit.
What apparently comes.
Yeah, because it was God's purpose for him to go to come.
Let me ask you something. Do you think you can all accept whatever it is God's going to do during the rest of your life as what he's going to do to bring about? stuff that affects us directly, it's personal, right? I mean, don't feel personal? I mean, somebody slaps me in the face, it seems different to me than if I see somebody else get slapped by somebody, right? It seems more personal when it's like whack and it's my face,
yeah.
Right? So, we can spend our whole life obsessing about what's just or unjust, fair or unfair, exactly how we got treated. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't seek justice and shouldn't ever make a complaint and shouldn't try to deal with things that happen to them that are not right. I'm not in any way saying that. But the focus can be on oneself and one's feelings and one's reactions, and simply be focused on whether it seems like what in God's creation we ought to actually be experiencing, as opposed to what we ended up experiencing. Are you following me? My life should have been different. I should not have had to go through this. Since I went through this, it had this effect on me. And since it had that effect on me, I'm going to react like this. And my reaction is going to have more effect on me. Although we don't usually analyze it that far and start identifying our reactions and our responses that was causing lots of trouble. We usually just find a way of finding something outside of ourselves to continue to direct and place the blame onto, so that we can justify ourselves in being whatever we're being. Right? And following me? That's one way to go through things. Another one is to see a picture that you see when you get far enough away from the mirror that you realize, oh, that's my face, I'm not just an inflamed core. And then you get a little farther away and you see, oh, I'm in a picture. Other people are in a picture. Wow, the whole world is in the picture. The whole world is in the picture. And something's going on. And it's bigger than me, but I'm a part of it. I'm a part to play. Oh, and I didn't really want to think it, but my pimple actually doesn't alter God's will or the whole thing that's going on. It's still happening, even when I've got a blemish. God's will can still be going on in my life, and I can still be doing His will, doing what He wills me to do. And maybe the pimple doesn't even mess up the process. In fact, maybe it teaches me something. After a while, maybe I realize, oh, I have a pimple on my face, and I can still go to work. I could be happy on a day when I have a pimple on my face. I could not think that everyone is thinking that I am a pimple. And I could function differently. And this whole family is learning a lot in the process. I'm gonna read you something here. The natural life is not spiritual, and it can only be made spiritual by sacrifice. If we do not resolutely sacrifice the natural, the supernatural can never become natural in us. There is no royal road there. Each of us has it entirely in his own hands. It is not a question of praying, but of performing. Does that make sense to you? So if I use as an example, God says to Abraham, take your son, the son you really, really love, and take him up on this mountain and sacrifice him. Regardless of all the emotion about that, what is it that he should do if that's really God's voice? Do it, right? How much would he need to pray about whether or not to do it? He, God said it, like you know, thou shalt not steal, we probably don't need to pray a lot about whether or not to steal. So Abraham just takes, and he just sets out to do it, right? So the issue there is that he sets out to perform it. He doesn't decide to fast for 3 days and pray, or fast for a month, or wait if he asks if he could wait a while. He just sets out to perform it. And when you think about Joseph, and this is later on, but when he says, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. And then you jump over to this passage in Matthew, which says, then Yeshua went with them to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to the disciples, sit here while I go over there and pray. And taking with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, my soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch, and watch with me. And going a little farther, he fell on his face and prayed, saying, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. And he came to his disciples and found them sleeping, and he said to Peter, so could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. When you look at the life of Messiah and then what happens, you know, after this, when he's betrayed and when he's convicted in a court that doesn't even do things according to legal principles, there's clearly an enemy that means it for evil, right? But we all would say that when it comes to what happened with Messiah, he was betrayed, he was crucified, the whole thing, all the lies and the false testimony, and then being abandoned by his disciples. Satan was trying to end God's plan of redemption, wasn't he? I mean, he meant it for evil, right? And there was a lot of evil in it. I mean, a lot of evil was done. But all the while, God means it for good. I'll have to find out what's so funny later, because I can't help noticing this.
You made me ask.
What?
Did God give Jesus a raw deal?
Thank you. See, this is really... We can all... I don't know. I assume most people spend years and years trying to come to terms with this. In a way, depending on where you are in your own spirit, it's a very bitter thing to really closely look at Yeshua and see what happened with him and what was brought about by what happened with him and what he gave up willingly. And what his Father actually will. See, we know that the Father actually did mean it when it comes to him, because he's a lamb slain before the ages. And you can't really blame all the perpetrators before you've even created humanity and say, this only happened because of stuff that they committed. Because the thing is, God could have prevented everything that's
right.
ever happened.
Right.
I'm not blaming him. I'm simply just saying, he's God. He could have done whatever he wanted. I see him as righteous no matter what he did. And And so, what was it you said again?
Did God give Yeshua a raw deal?
Yeah, so let's answer the question. Did God give Yeshua a raw deal?
By human terms, it was kind of a raw deal.
Doesn't get any rawer than that. Yeah. Or rather, did God and Yeshua conspire in our salvation?
Yes.
The what?
Did God and Yeshua conspire in our salvation?
Yes.
It sure seems like it. Look, I've had moments in my life where I put the absolute total shame. I mean from somebody else. Just mean when I saw myself. And some of those moments have been when I'm tempted to use words some of you use now and then, but I'm not going to at the moment. They aren't necessarily appropriate just because other people use them. Right, Becky? You know, sour a person can get, right, over things that they just wish were different and think were wrong, and they think they got a raw deal. And so, and you can get bitter, and you can blame people, and you can get vindictive, and you can even get dangerous. I mean, you could get to a place where you could lose it and do things that are tragic. I mean, really bad. And then, if you're in a state something like that, and you actually get a glimpse of what happened to Yeshua, and at the same moment you're still willing to accept redemption, salvation, cleansing, victory, and freedom, there is no way to keep those two things inside of the same person without creating a total set of lies or some kind of rationale that actually undoes what God is trying to tell you. You can't be that. Because if you're willing to go, oh, look at Yeshua, he died for me. Look what he went through. Look what he did. He bought me out of slavery. He gave me a new life. I deserve death. I deserve eternal punishment. And he went through that to take me out of it. But please, Lord, just let me get my vengeance on the people that have wronged me. Or just let me see justice for myself. If in those moments you actually get a glimpse of him, it will just completely undo you. It has to. And so the thing is, yeah, there's injustice. Every one of us has been treated unjustly on any number of occasions, I'm sure. But does that mean God owed us something better than what we got? Does that mean we should be bitter or unforgiving or think that it has to just come around in a way where we don't go through stuff like that, and whatever we did go through has been somehow, I don't know, I mean, whatever it is we would require, everybody that did it has to pay, or whatever. The thing is, and and sort of beyond humanity, world rulers, his own people, those that should have accepted him, they rejected him. And so the result of all of that that happened to him, and what happened to Joseph, because it's all part of the flow of the whole thing, and Joseph is, Joseph is part of getting to the day when Messiah shows up in the flesh. When we look at that, the thing is, the only thing we can rightfully conclude is that we deserve death, and because of what a complete innocent in Yeshua suffered for us willingly and absolutely unjustly at the hand of his own people and an occupying people, we're spared the horrors that we actually deserve. Just doesn't leave a lot of room for morose introspection and the weaving of a tale in which we are the victim and we deserve better. It just doesn't leave any room for it. Well, I'll stop there. I never even used my technology. So, in closing, I want to, if this hasn't been encouraging so far, I want to frame it like this. In gazing at Yeshua and meditating on him and asking the Lord to show us the truth, the reality, there is the key handed to us, or perhaps unlocked by the hand of God, one or the other or both, that actually releases us. It will actually stop the suffering that we are causing ourselves by persisting in wrong thoughts. And that is the worst suffering, I think, that we actually go through. Because in grace and power, according to God's mercy and all he does, the other stuff we can walk through with grace and with joy, even if they're suffering at the same time. It's the soulish, selfish rewriting of things that actually causes the real suffering that harms us. And so, whatever of that any of us are going through will be alleviated by really just seeking to really see Yeshua and to meditate on his life, what he went through, what he did, what he was willing to do, and how God's love and redemption came to us. It really just completely reframes everything. And so, I'm actually just thrilled with the prospect of change and transformation at the hand of truth. It's whenever I'm really looking. that's where we're headed. We're all heading to glory. We're on a glorious journey together to glory. And